From the Triangle Radio Reading Service in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it's time to connect to success. On Connect to Success, we explore various ways through which one can pursue their own success by learning from others. We do this through interviews with and reading articles about people who are visually impaired and who have achieved success in their lives. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Connect to Success, what does that mean? Connect is pretty straightforward. It is joining two or more things together. Success is broader, yet very personal. It can be as simple as completing a single task or as complex as accomplishing a multi-part long-term goal. It's all about hope, imagination, and resilience. It's being open to what is possible. And it's personal, because it is what you decide is most important to you. During today's program, we will be speaking with Steve Murphy of Raleigh, North Carolina. We will explore with him how he is connected with his personal definition of success. Welcome, Steve.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
Doing outstanding.
Great. Steve, I understand that you are visually impaired, and would you be willing to share with our listeners the way in which you are visually impaired and how it came about?
Certainly. When I was about 16 years of age, eye doctor informed my mom that I was going blind due to retinitis pigmentosa. And at the time, she never said anything to me about it. She just let me go ahead and live my life. But when I reached about age 26, I was working in a warehouse, Roses Corporation, located in Henderson, North Carolina, and I found myself bumping into objects, tripping over things. And even though I had really good central vision, I had lost my peripheral vision. So at that time, you know, I went to see my eye doctor, and he referred me to an ophthalmologist at Chapel Hill. And at that point, they told me that I had this condition and that I was already legally blind and that I needed to get adjusted to not driving because I would continue to lose vision.
That must have been a bit shocking for you.
It was surprising, but because I still had good central vision and the only problems I was having at the time was, you know, it seemed like I wasn't using my vision very well and tripping over things. I think I was more in denial. They're telling me I'm legally blind, I'm going blind, but yet I don't see the real results of that yet, just some minor inconveniences. It took a little time to set in.
Did the physicians offer any medical care options?
All that they told me was that there was nothing they could do for the condition at that time and told me to come back in 3 months. And, of course, my thoughts were, why am I going to come back and pay you all this money? Just take a look at my eyes when you tell me there's nothing you can do. So at that point, I didn't do anything. But as time went on, I noticed problems with night vision problems, you know, driving my car at night. I remember a time when I had traded cars and I was going down the road and I said, wow, my headlights must need adjusting. I'm just not seeing the roads quite as well. And then I remember driving up to Raleigh on a rainy night and it was hard to see the white lines. And all those were early stages related to my eye condition. By the time I reached 26, as I said earlier, I was having trouble on a job, and even though I found out what was going on, I knew I could do that job for a while longer, but what was life going to be like 10 years from there? So that really got me thinking about, well, if I'm going blind, what can I do now to change the future?
It doesn't sound like when you first got that diagnosis that it really slowed you down.
It didn't. I was still driving my car. I was racing motorcycles at the time.
Wait a minute. You were what? Racing motorcycles?
I was racing motorcycles, water skiing. I mean, I've always been very athletic, and, you know, anything athletic I probably have done or attempted to do. And at the time, it was still the same. I was still playing tennis. I can remember having really focused really hard to try to really stay on top of the ball when it come at me, because once it got out of my visual fields, I couldn't hit the ball.
So you're okay straight on,
mm-hmm.
but peripherally you had to be very careful.
Right. I had to be able to track and scan very well. You know, when you lose your peripheral vision, you just instinctively do that. Well, all people do. I did anyway. And it works pretty good initially, but as time goes on, you realize you're missing things.
Well, I hear you. I hear what you're saying, and I'm thinking about a car, and I'm saying, well, okay, maybe, but then I'm hearing motorcycle and racing in the same sentence.
Well, let me help you understand.
Okay.
If you think about when you're driving, your peripheral vision has got to pick up both sides of the car as you're going down the road.
Correct.
When you're on a motorcycle, it doesn't take as much peripheral vision to really tell where the motorcycle is going. So to me, it seemed easier to go riding on a motorcycle than it did a car. It was easier to see the speedometer. I was going in a tight area. It didn't take much space for the motorcycle. But the car, when you can't see both fenders, you know, going through a tight area, it was more difficult.
Now, at your current age, Steve, would you have a different recommendation for someone who was your age at the time about the motorcycle?
Well, I certainly would.
Good.
I mean, because when they're at the end stages, when I stopped driving, there was an episode where I pulled into a restaurant and I didn't see anyone. And about the time I stopped, a person walked right in front of me and I never saw him.
Mm-hmm.
And it really scared me, because if I hadn't have been stopping, I very well would have run over the person.
Well, even with that, I have a suspicion that your general sense of awareness must have been pretty strong to be able to go ahead and ride a motorcycle and race on a motorcycle. You must have had almost a sixth sense that was coming on board as your vision was perhaps leaving.
Yes, but you have to realize at the time, this was before I was told I was legally blind and going blind, and even afterwards, no one said, well, you know, you have 170 degrees of peripheral vision, and I was down to 20, but I didn't have that information. All I know is in front of me, I could see well, and I had to turn my head to see left and turn my head to the right to see right. The visual fields compounded by the vision problems and problems seeing with bright sunlight sometime early in the morning or late in the afternoon when the sun rises or sets. You have to see that. I mean, you can see that over the years, it just gradually got more difficult to a point where I didn't enjoy riding anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I did, because I had to go to work. It was easier to get around on a motorcycle intellectually. It wasn't as safe, but at the time, I could navigate it better. But when, you know, I decided that I needed to make some changes for my life, you know, basically I sold everything I had and entered college at age 28.
Well, there's a bold step. Had you been in college before that at all?
No, sir.
Or you just decided, now I need to look to another aspect of my future?
My parents, my dad had a fourth grade education. My mother did graduate high school. Their idea of a good education was, and they told me this many times, they said, son, you're going to go to high school until you graduate if you're 30 years old. So it was never a question whether I was going to get a high school education. But I thought only smart people and rich people went to college. When you start losing your vision, you start noticing problems with your vision, and someone tells you you're legally blind and you're going blind, then it makes you think, well, I'm okay now, but what's life going to be like down the road, as I said earlier?
Well, what kind of work had you been doing?
It seemed like I've worked my whole life. When I was a teenager, I worked in tobacco fields, priming tobacco. And then when I was 16, I went to work at a grocery store as a stock boy and did that through high school. And then when I graduated from high school, by knowing a person that knew my work ethic, they gave me an opportunity to work for an electronics company. It was called Telerent Leasing Corporation. And we traveled all over the country installing electronic systems such as message systems, alarm systems, master antenna systems, and those type of things in hotels. And I did that for several years, traveled all over the country. And one good thing about that is, you know, I had really good vision then. I painted all these pictures, or I have all these visual pictures in my mind, so I can still visualize all those things. But even on that job, because there was a lot of color coding and doing wiring that were color, you know, different various colors, I noticed I had problems seeing some of the different colors, and that was one of the symptoms of my eye condition, the RP. But anyway, in the mid-70s, things got really tight, and I was one of those individuals that got the job by knowing someone, and I was the last person hired. So when they started doing cutbacks, they kept the people that had college degrees and a lot more work experience. So I got paid off, and at that time I went back to Henderson and actually got on with the Roses Corporation. And while there, I started off working in receiving and then in shipping, and then became a dock supervisor before I left.
So it was at about that time that the vision went, and you decided you needed to do something for the future.
Yes, sir. Like I said, I was age 26, and I was having those problems, and I went to see an ophthalmologist, and he just told me like it was. And then, you know, over the next 2 years, probably the next 6 months, you know, trying to examine what did I need to do. I was not one to just sit home. I said, you know, who wants to be blind, sit home, and can't do anything? I had some good friends and some mentors that said, well, Steve, you know, education is really the answer. And I said, well, how can I do that? I remembered something my dad had told me all this life. He said, son, you can do anything you want to do if you're willing to work hard and pay the price.
Great advice.
It was. Throughout my whole life, whenever times get tough, I think about him. This was a man that had a fourth grade education but could do anything. He could see someone rebuild a car engine. He could do it. He could see someone build a house. He could do it. There was nothing he couldn't do. So I had a great role model. And he was one that always encouraged me. And like I said son, you can do anything. You may have to work twice as hard. It may take you twice as long, but you can do it. So when the idea about education, I said, well, picking up boxes I may not be able to do when I'm blind, but maybe there's something else I can do. So I picked up the phone, and I looked up services for the blind and called them, said, I don't know who I need to talk to, but I'm going blind, and I want to keep on working. The social worker for the blind here in Vance County, actually connected me with a gentleman who was a supervisor in the vocational rehabilitation program with the North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind, and my journey began going in a different direction.
So off to college.
Well, between 26 and 28, you know, as I told you earlier, I played a lot of sports, made some pretty good money, had a lot of toys, and sold all those toys, the car, the Jeep, the motorcycle, the boat, paid off all my bills, and applied to Western Carolina University. Still didn't quite know what I was going to do, but I knew I needed to do something, and I pursued a degree in psychology.
Wow. Now, there's a change if you go back in history in terms of what you discussed about your mother and father and the education, where it should go. That's a good move.
I just knew education was the answer. And, of course, I went to Western and graduated and did really well. And there were some tough times. Of course, I would hear dad's voice, son. You know, you just have to work through the hard part and keep on going. And then also, I would have this thought, you can quit and you can go home and sit in a rocking chair. And that was not the answer. I just pulled up my pants, said, all right, suck it up and do it. So I went ahead and graduated. I started at Western Carolina probably around 82 and graduated 1986 with a BS in psychology.
Do you mean you went to college and got a degree in 4 years?
Yes, sir.
And you were legally blind?
Yes, sir.
And why did my kids have to go for 6 years?
Well, I wanted to go back to work.
That's wonderful. You should be commended just for the fact that you got through in 4 years, considering that you had to work extra hard to do it.
Well, I did, but it went back to paying the price. And if there's a price to be paid and this is what I need to accomplish, then that's what I do. You know, I remember sitting at graduation, and my dad and my brother and my cousin and some friends were there in the auditorium. And I just, you know, looking back, I said, how did I get here? It was just unreal to be sitting in there waiting for them to call your name to go up and get your college degree, because this was as far as the moon was, you know, back when I was in high school. How does a poor person go to college? You know, only smart people go to college. But then again, that message from dad, you can do it, son.
A wonderful day for you, and I am certain that they were so overwhelmingly proud of you.
And they were. And, you know, of course, I had a B.S. degree in psychology. And I don't mean it's ugly, but it turned out to be a B.S. degree because I, you know, graduated, I come to Raleigh, was going to set the world on fire, and looked for jobs, and I was hoping to go to work in human resources. And I found out, well, it was so much competition that people with high school degrees who had worked in clerical jobs were getting those entry-level jobs, or someone who had a master's. So suddenly here I was, sold everything I had to go through college and sacrificed all that and couldn't find a job. And it was probably the lowest point in my life. It really was. But then again, God brought someone else into my life that gave me some words of encouragement. And this is sort of a funny story, is that when I graduated, I was talking to a friend of mine who was head of psychological services at Raleigh Lions Clinic for the Blind. He says, Steve, there is a master's program at Mississippi State for vocational specialists serving the blind and visually impaired. And it was, you know, in the rehabilitation counseling program. And before he got it out of his mouth, I said, it's no way in heck I would ever go to Mississippi and go to graduate school. And you know how that goes. You say something you're not going to do.
And you're going to go do it.
It happens. Well, after looking for a job all summer, it was August, September, and was very discouraged. And a friend of mine, and she was a counselor at the evaluation unit. And this was a place, the place is Raleigh Lions Clinic for the Blind. Back when I was at Western Carolina, I did a psychology internship, and they gave me an opportunity to do one in their evaluation unit. So I met Dr. Paul Rowland, who was head of psychological services, and I met Ethel Brown, who was a counselor there, who turned out to be a great mentor at the time. But after looking for that job and couldn't find one, she said, well, Steve, you know, you can move to Mississippi, and if you work really hard, you probably could finish that program in a year and come back to North Carolina, have your master's, and then, you know, you almost guaranteed a job. Mm. And I took a deep breath, and I said, yeah, here we go again. But then again, Dad's voice, son, you can do it. I applied, and gosh, by October, I was accepted at Mississippi State in their master's program. And once again, just getting an undergraduate degree was unbelievable. But Steve Murphy getting a master's degree?
There you go.
And the funny part is, you know, when I'm going back for a second, but when I went to my high school to get my transcripts to turn them in to Western Carolina, I saw an old guidance counselor, and she said, Steve, what in the world makes you think you can go to college now? You didn't really do anything in high school.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I switched over. But, you know, I'm not worried about what everyone else could do or what they thought. I knew who I am and how I was brought up. And if someone else could do it, I could do it.
I'm glad you did not give in to that disencouragement.
Well, exactly. So the journey kept on. My dad and my brother would pack me up in December, and I moved to Mississippi. Got a graduate apartment, and the program was a 51-hour graduate program. I did all the coursework in 1 year and then come back to North Carolina and knocked out my internship and started looking for a job. And it took me still then another 6 to 8 months to get my first professional job. And the North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind offered me a rehabilitation counseling position in Fayetteville or Asheville. And I chose to go to Fayetteville just because it was close to my dad. So, you know, I spent 7 years in Fayetteville as a rehab counselor and received a promotion in 1996 and relocated to Raleigh, where I worked the next 18 years as district manager of the Vocational Rehabilitation Program with the North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind. Retired there in 2013 at age 60 and did a little traveling and just what Steve wanted to do, and found out that my passion was still burning, serving the blind and visually impaired. And one of the places that I had been associated with, you know, when I did my internship, as well as, you know, when I worked with Services for the Blind here in Raleigh, Ms. Janet Griffey with the Raleigh Lions Clinic for the Blind called me and wanted me to come in and talk to her, and went in there and she offered me a job. She said, I'll start you off part-time and maybe move you to full-time. And I said, well, Ms. Griffey, I don't want a full-time job, but but I'll take a part-time job and I'll give you $4 worth of work. But what I mean is, you know, I'll give the 110% for the time I'm there and get things done. And I started there May of last year, so I'm, you know, been there about a year now, and Currently, I'm the Director of Rehabilitation Services with RLCV, and we're doing some great things. We are building a really, really good technology training program, assistive technology. Last year, we were able to open a thrift store called Sightly Worn, where all the proceeds goes towards hiring other people who are blind or visually impaired or providing technology training. One other great thing about the thrift store as well as RLCB and in my role with them is that I do a lot of the recruitment. And when we recruit for the corporate office or for some of our base supply stores across the country or the thrift store or the technology center, I reach out and try to find individuals who are blind and visually impaired to fill those positions. Those are always our first thoughts, you know, who are out there that we can give an opportunity. And we have even taken that step together working as a team. We partner with Governor Moorhead School. We take high school kids and put them in a thrift store to give them some work experience to see what the world of work is like. Currently, I have a college graduate who is doing an internship teaching assistive technology. And then I just had another college student that was in her junior year that come in and did a three-month work experience. She had very limited work experience, and this is a way that we could introduce her to, you know, doing assistive technology training, but also programs and services. So my passion goes on.
I guess so. I can't imagine, now that I hear about it, that retiring at 60 would cause you to slow down at all.
No, the only thing I regret doing is riding that motorcycle.
I still want to do that.
I still want to do it. In fact, I would love to have like a 50-acre field with no trees and give me a dirt bike and let me just turn all loose. That would be amazing. Not quite the same, but still enjoyable.
You know, I think I have discovered the key to you. There's challenge. There are challenges. Whatever challenges are out there, I want to see what's on the other side of the hill.
Let me share this with you. You know, success is measured many different ways. You know, some people see it as financial or it's the biggest job, the top job. For me, it's always been about succeeding. And what I mean by that is that I always set goals. And when I accomplish a goal, then I set more goals. Sometimes I reach goals. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I hit roadblocks. And do I stop? No, I move to the left. I move to the right and keep on going. There's been a lot of peaks and valleys in my life. You have to go through valleys to get to the peaks. But the thing is, as long as you continue to move forward and try your best, and when you look back and say you've given it your all, you didn't stop, nothing stopped, you kept moving forward. To me, that's really success. And that can be no matter where you come from. You can grow up wealthy and have all the opportunities. You can be the poorest person like I was. Never had an idea that I would end up talking to you today. One great thing I share with people is that through services that Division of Services for the Blind offers and some of the things that we offer, you can take someone whose life is wherever it may be and they go blind and you would think that things only going to equal out or be less. For myself and many others I could tell you about, that my life actually improved after blindness. There is life after blindness, and life can be better after blindness. For me, I would never have gotten a college education if it hadn't been for going blind. I would never have been able to travel and do the things I've done that professional positions have allowed me to do. Those successes led me to getting a second-degree black belt in karate. So I'm just saying, you know, life doesn't end when you go blind. It's all in what you make it. A person should surround themselves with positive people, have a very good support group, those people that encourage you, not people that tell you can't do it, but people that encourage you. And that's my story right there. You know, I've never really thought that my life has been that bad, but it's because I've had that family support. I've had some good mentors along the way, and I've had God in my life, and all that makes all the difference in the world.
Sounds to me like opening yourself to what could be.
Exactly. Dream what the possibilities can be, yeah. And being willing to pay the price, to work hard.
Steve, do you think that applies to folks who perhaps have lost their vision in their 50s, as well as to those who have arrived in this world without vision?
I think it's the same. I think one strain I see that in my 30 plus years of working with people who are blind and visually impaired, it could be any disability or it could be any person. It really comes down to, if you don't have good family support, then you need to get good support from friends. Find those people that will encourage you, as I said before. And I don't think it's anything anyone can't do. If you have average intelligence and you're willing to work hard and willing to do what it takes, I don't think it's anything you can't accomplish. And that's across the board. It doesn't matter if you're disabled, no disability, blindness, or wherever you're born, wherever you do, if you're willing to make changes and just work your tail off and do what it takes, I think you can be successful. You can succeed in life.
I think there's another aspect of that that has just popped up as well. Looking back at your story and how you sought out and undertook challenges and overcame them, if you are willing to exert yourself, apparently there are people willing to work with you.
Without a doubt. Like I said, the Services for Blind that I was associated with in organizations like RLCB, there are services and there are supports out there that can help someone who's blind and visually impaired accomplish anything that you want to accomplish. No one's going to give you anything. These agencies are not going to give it to you, but they can open those doors. They can help you. They can support you. They can encourage you. And with that support, if you're open-minded yourself, and willing to work hard and pay the price, you can do it. I could tell you many, many cases of the same. I could just rattle off some names. And that starts with, like for me, did I want to go to Mississippi for grad school? No, but it was the path I had to take to obtain the goal that I wanted to reach. I wanted to be employed where vision didn't matter, and I was able to move into a career that not only could I work and retire, but also give back and encourage others. I think life is just what you make out of it, and if you're willing just to pay the price, you can do it.
Words of wisdom, words of success. Our thanks to Steve Murphy for sharing his thoughts and experiences with you, our listeners. Steve, it's been a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking with you.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's program and found something in it that can be beneficial to you or someone you know. It's never too soon or too late to connect to your success. Be sure to tune in every third Tuesday of the month at 2:30 p.m. This program is rebroadcast as noted in the TRRS program guide and is available as a podcast at our website, www.triangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call TRRS at 919-832-5138. I'm Dick Hayden for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time. We'll be right back.